Chuck and Julie, bringing you the truth straight up.
I'm Julie Hagan. I'm working at
an Emmy-winning former investigative reporter, a highly successful trial attorney, and publisher of a major Denver area newspaper. They've been partners as talk show hosts and in marriage as parents for over 10 years, providing thought-provoking information, opinion, and entertainment live, local, and interactive. Everyone's voice is always welcome on the Chuck and Julie Show.
Well, hello, everybody. Chuck Bonneal, Julie Hayden, the Chuck and Julie Grassroots Show, Truth Straight Up.
Brought to you by Mountain West Wellness, Advanced Acupuncture, and Chinese Medicine. A lot to talk about today. We're going to have Lori Sane coming up in a few minutes to talk about the update on the coup attempt going on here in Colorado. But wanted to bring up with us one of our favorite. Yeah, Robert Spencer. And hey, Robert, you could go out there. You're going to unmute yourself. You have a great column up in Front Page magazine, sort of exposing Tim Walz. But there's so much other stuff, too, the Hamas protests, the 8 billion people have been flown in, the DNC. But first, welcome to the show, and thank you for your time.
Yeah, we'd love to see you.
And thank you.
So what's the deal? He's just a grandfatherly, new kind of man.
That kind of masculinity.
Right, he's got that new age masculinity. I'm not clear what that means. And J.D. Vance, he's just weird, you know? I mean.
And luckily, we've got just a straight all-American dad from the Midwest.
That's right, who destroyed Minnesota, like, single-handedly. So what's the...
Men are women and put on a dress and suddenly you're a woman. They're normal.
Yeah, they're normal.
Believe that the way people have thought for the last 5 millennia, they're weird.
Yeah, that's right. We're the weird ones. Well, what do you make? I mean, so Tim Walz is trying to pretend like he's, again, just like the hunky-dory, grandfatherly governor from Minnesota. But in your column in Front Page magazine, you're like, you know, actually nothing is farther from the truth. Well, I mean, what's the reality here?
Well, he's another Marxist like Kamala Harris, and he's a very dangerous individual against the police in favor of the big riots that we saw in the summer of 2020. His wife actually said that while Minneapolis was burning down, and incidentally, a former police lieutenant in Minneapolis has said Tim Walz wanted Minneapolis to burn down. He let it happen because he hates the police. And his wife is in a video interview, you can see it, saying, I kept the windows open that night as Minneapolis was burning because I wanted to smell the burning tires that the rioters were setting on fire. It was exciting to her because, you know, it was the revolution. It was the left making a violent insurrection, which is what
it was an all-family affair because the daughter would let the rioters know that the National Guard was in this neighborhood, not the neighborhood. So family working together for the betterment of all.
There you go. And so Tim Walz, he's got a record as long as your arm of support for all the usual things that leftists support. And one of them that I took particular notice of, because I watch Jihad Activity, is that he's pals with jihadis. I'm not sure he was a speaker or a guest, but in any case, he attended the 2019 CARE Minnesota Council on American Islamic Relations Minnesota chapter conference on Islamophobia. Now, that in itself should raise alarms because, you know, think back 20, 30 before 9/11 anyway. So 30 years ago, 25 years ago, we never heard the word Islamophobia. It's a made up word that is designed to scare people into thinking it's wrong to oppose jihad terrorism. And he appears at this Islamophobia conference, and he's in the company of all these people who are deeply problematic. That's just the to put it mildly. In the first place, CARE is still listed as an unindicted co-conspirator in a Hamas terror funding case. Then he was standing next to, Walz was standing next to Atim Bazian, who is a professor of Islamophobia out at University of California, Berkeley, and he's called for an intifada, which is a violent revolution in the United States. Then Walz is friends with and has had over at the governor's mansion at least 5 times Asad Zaman of the Muslim American Society of Minnesota. Now, the Muslim American Society is the Muslim Brotherhood in the U.S. The Muslim Brotherhood in the U.S., according to a captured internal document, is dedicated to eliminating and destroying Western civilization from within. And one neat thing about that, folks, is that the people who are going to do it, it says eliminating and destroying Western civilization from within and sabotaging its miserable house by their hands. So in other words, they're going to get the people inside the West to destroy their own nation. And I think, oh, that's Tim Walz all over.
Right. Well, yeah, it's like that's why that sounds like a perfect qualification for vice president.
Well, what's amazing is obviously they knew all that. And they knew that some of it would come out. But they said, you know, not to worry. We control the mainstream press and we'll just sell them on the grandfatherly coach.
Joyful.
Joyful, the whole deal. And we'll get away with it or it doesn't matter. I mean, it's amazing that they, you know, they went, that Bashir guy from, you know, he's actually a moderate.
They're just a fun group.
And of course, we can't have a Jew. I mean, you know, Shapiro. I mean, let's not go overboard.
Mm-hmm. That's why they picked Walz, because the other guy they were going to pick was Shapiro. The Democrat Party base right now, they hate Israel. They want to see it destroyed. And these are the people that Biden and now Harris have been courting. So there was no way they could pick Shapiro. I'm not sure they did know about all this about Walz because they didn't really have time to vet him. He was just not Shapiro, and that was good enough. Not Jewish. Okay, let's go for this guy. And on the other hand, you're right, Chuck. These things don't really matter for the Democrat base anymore. You know, they think, oh, he's hanging around with jihadis? Great, we've been out marching in favor of the jihadis to destroy Israel. So what's the big deal? There's a problem here. And so it's just not, it might not play well with the American people, but the Democrat base, and not the American people that we are used to thinking of when we say the term.
Well, and that's just sort of partly on Chuck's question. It's like the Democrats, they don't care, right? Like you said, Kamala Harris comes from a Marxist background. Barack Obama comes from a Marxist background. And they don't really ever deny it. Or I mean, it's for whatever reason, like you said, the plan is to destroy it from within. And they are carrying it out right in front of our eyes. And they're not even pretending anymore, it seems to me.
That's right. Yeah. I think that they think that the American people now are dumb enough to go for this, that they've not been educated about communism. They've not been educated about their own history and why America is distinctive and why it's worth preserving as it has been. And, you know, the educational system has been corrupted for all these years. They think communism means sharing and being nice to poor people. And they have no idea about the gulags. I mean, you can look at surveys of kids who've gone through school. They don't have any idea what's wrong with communism. I've talked myself to many young people, and so many of them have said, communism is great in theory. It's just never been put into practice properly.
Right.
I mean, you've heard this too. So they're going to put it into practice properly. It's going to be okay, no big deal. And they don't have any idea that it always necessarily leads to violence, leads to gulags, leads to unimaginable suffering. They have no clue. And then they think about our own country and they think, oh, a bunch of racist slave owners founded this country and it's built on racism. And so it's rotten. And these people want to change it, transform it radically. Sounds great. And they have no idea that the United States is the freest country that's ever been on the face of the earth. They have no idea that the ideas they take for granted about the equality of rights of all people before the law, about the idea of justice, even for the downtrodden, even those things, those are ideas that originated in America. For the first time, were applied in America. And so they don't appreciate what they have. They'll all the more readily give it up.
Well, you know, you can't blame them too much when you have a Justice Department filled with some of the brightest and best lawyers who don't believe in equality before the law. They believe in a two-track system, one for conservatives, the other for liberal, and so forth, and they enforce it that way.
And they love it. The people who are voting Democrat, the people who are at the DNC this week, they love that because they think we are the righteous. We are chosen. We are the just. And everybody outside They're evil gargoyles who deserve whatever they get. And so they don't have any problem with a two-tier justice system. They don't have any problem with the destruction of the American Republic and the idea that only the Democrat Party's ideas are going to be allowed to be spoken in the public square. They don't have any problem with the Biden administration colluding with the social media giants to silence dissidents about COVID, and they'll do it again. They don't have any problem with any of that because they've been told that we are the focus of evil in the modern world, that Donald Trump is really, right, and that all of his supporters. And there's no, you know, it used to be that in hundreds of years ago, when it was the church persecuting people in Europe, and there was a very simple phrase that was used to justify it. Error has no rights. And the people who said that, that said, we're right, yeah, and they're wrong. And so we got to shut them up. We have to, for the common good, because otherwise they'll spread their errors all around and people will end up going to hell because they will not know the truth and be guided away from it. And well, that's just how the Democrats think.
Well, right, they also have the other comforting thought is that the Republicans will never apply those standards to them. I mean, okay, Donald Trump is impeached two times while in office. And the Democrats, the Republicans, all they managed to do was finally get out a report. Oh, that was big.
Yeah. After now that Biden's on his way out.
Now he's on the way out. They're going to be tough. They're coming out with a report. What do you think of that, everybody? Yeah. We're never going to go with Eric Holder. We're never going to go against any of them. And they're right.
They're the lead also. I think, and we've talked about this before, Robert, to me, it's not even so much Democrats and Republicans anymore. It's these elite people or people who have called themselves and positioned themselves as elite and the rest of us, it seems to me.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. I couldn't agree more. I mean, I refer to the, and of course, I didn't make this up, but I very much like the old formulation of the Democrats and the Republicans. The Democrats are the evil party and the Republicans are the stupid party.
Yes.
But they're working together. I don't think that even the Republicans are stupid enough to wait 3 years, 3.5 years after the man bows out, when he's an empty shell, just playing out the string and hoping that we don't need a president for the next few months. And then suddenly they drop this report saying, this guy's a criminal and he ought to be impeached.
Well, it's no different than HR.
Or are they they're in cahoots with Democrats. They wanted to slow walk this thing. So, and then they put it out today so they have the appearance of doing something. And their base is placated, but they don't actually have to go through the motions. Now contrast that with Trump was out of office in January 2021. And they rushed to get another impeachment through because they thought that it would prevent him from being able to run again in 2024. And it was a matter of days that it took them to get it all together. Now, if they had been waited, if they waited 3.5 years, they'd be only doing that now.
Well, what I've always loved is the bipartisan border bill that the Oklahoma Republican senator put together, which basically would have just implemented a quicker scale, getting more people in the United States and as citizens. And that's all it was for. It was not going to stop the flow. It was not going to do anything. And yet the Republicans, at least Lankford and other ones, go, this would be great. And after it failed, then they all said, well, Democrats said, Donald Trump wanted to stop it because it was so great. And you got no pushback from majority Republicans. Well, that was true. Yeah, I mean, you know, I mean, it really, you know, I think I've said this before. I was lobbying down at the state capitol and we're down the cafeteria and we'd see somebody who we didn't recognize. He was a legislator because they always have a pin on and so forth. They have a contest, you know, Republican or Democrat. They look evil and shifty, but pretty smart. You go, Dem. If they look kind of gullible and dumb, but nice, Republican. I mean, it worked every time. I mean, you could just call them out. The only problem you had is sometimes you'd see somebody look pretty smart, and that would be a moderate Republican, a left wing Republican. Okay, he didn't quite have the evil look in him, but he's going to get there.
Oh, that's excellent. And also, you know, this has been going on for years. What you were saying reminds me of our mutual friend, Congressman Tancredo, and how he says that I worked with him on his memoirs. And, you know, you all should know if you're admirers of Congressman Tancredo, you can get his very revealing and entertaining book, I Was Trump Before Trump Was Cool. It's out at Amazon now. But in any case, he says in it that he was sort of dismayed because, you know, he went to Washington and he thought he was going to be fighting for immigration against illegal immigration and for responsible immigration controls, and that the Republicans would be behind it, and that they kept slithering away, you know, and making excuses and never helping him out on any of it. And eventually it dawned on him that the Democrats want the illegal migrants for the votes and the Republicans want them for the cheap labor under the minimum wage. And so they both want illegal migrants, and nobody cares about the damage this is doing to the country.
No. Well, and what about, you know, switching over to the DNC, you know, kind of your point, it's like, you know, they're not even trying to hide it anymore. On the one hand, they're having to board up Chicago. I mean, we were in Milwaukee, right, for the RNC, and it was very pleasant. Yes, there was security and things like that, but the city wasn't boarded up. You know, it wasn't, you weren't afraid to go anywhere. You know, and in downtown Chicago, everything's boarded up because they're importing, and I'm sure many of them are professional, you know, pro-Hamas demonstrators and protesters who want to take over the convention. And the Democrats don't actually seem to care about that, right? I mean, they don't want it to, like, wreck anybody's speech or anything like that. But you know they could stop it if they wanted to, right? Because it's them in their own way doing it, right?
They can't stop it because it is, you're right, it's their base. Yeah. And the last thing they want to do, as the selection of Tim Walz indicates, the last thing they want to do is antagonize all those pro-Hamas protesters. They're desperately afraid that they're going to say, okay, we're going to take our marbles and go home. We're not going to vote for Trump, but we're not going to vote for you either. We're just not going to vote, and you're going to lose. This is something that Rashida Tlaib, the congresswoman from Michigan, of course, and Nihad Awad of the Council on American Islamic Relations, they actually threatened Biden with this before he bowed out. They said, you're not going to get a single Muslim vote if you don't press Israel for a ceasefire, which would essentially be a surrender because it would allow Hamas to survive. And that means not just that they wouldn't get the Muslim votes, but also votes from the significant portion of the hard left that makes up the core Democrat base at this point.
How did that Islamic, that Muslim faction, how did it gain so much power? And I mean, you know, I mean, if you had a bunch of Christians saying that, they would just smack them around and say, shut up and go home. We'll have you arrested. Right. I mean, why is it that this Muslim faction has so much power in the United States anymore?
Well, that's the thing. See, people don't realize this, but that's what Muslims do immediately after they come into a new country, is they start to seek political power. This is not some Islamophobic stereotype or rumor or anything. This is a matter of history and record. You can read my book, The History of Jihad. I challenge anybody to show that it's not true. And the reason for that is because Islam is political and supremacist at its very heart. Seeking political power, holding political power is part of Islam. And there's no separation between the political and the religious like there is in Christianity. So you have a small number of Muslims in the United States, but they wield outsized political power because they've been working now since the early 60s to get it. And so you've got people who are deeply entrenched in the federal bureaucracy. You've also got these congresswomen, Ilhan Omar and Rashida Tlaib. And you might think, well, three congressmen, because there's also Andre Carson, who's much less high profile. But you've got three Muslim Congress people. Why is that such a big deal? Because that's a swing vote. They could make the difference between whether Michigan or Minnesota goes Republican or Democrat. And that's just the kind of power that they wield when they're a minority. It's the same thing in France. In the last presidential election, Macron's margin of victory over Marine Le Pen was the Muslim vote. If there'd been no Muslims in France, then he wouldn't have won, although he might still have, because if there'd been no Muslims in France, Marine Le Pen wouldn't have an issue because she's for limiting the mass migration of Muslims into France. So in any case, though, they put him over. If it hadn't been for them, he would not have won. And it's the same thing now. They're afraid that if they don't placate the Muslims, that is the Democrats, if they don't placate the Muslims, they lose Michigan and Minnesota, they could lose the whole thing.
What about foreign money? I mean, always is everything, you know, politics is money too. Is there money coming from there too that is, you know, it's a shell game hidden and shuffled and things like that?
Big money from Qatar right now. That's who's shelling out. It used to be the Saudis, but the Saudis have cut way back because their crown prince now, Mohammed bin Salman, he wants to go in a different direction. But the Qataris, they have poured millions and millions of dollars into the American universities. And this is why we see all these kids who are out there in these encampments, and they're totally sold on the idea that Hamas is just and right and Israel is evil. Where do they get these ideas? They learn them in their classes right in the same university. And the same universities teach this stuff, which is false propaganda, because Qatar is paying the bills.
Well, not only are the American universities kids learning at a young age, but the demographics of American universities. I was a friend who went to Auburn. He says half the students at Auburn are from overseas. Absolutely. Half the students. And he said Harvard all the same, because you know they can charge them full boat and they'll pay full boat. And they can still get all their diversity standards without having any real diversity. So a university, you know, Harvard used to be 25% Jewish when I was going to school. Now it's 5. I mean, yeah. They're just cutting back and cutting back.
It's a hostile environment for Jews.
Yes. Yeah. But what talking about voting blocks, I mean, what is amazing, it's almost like Republicans, the Jewish vote still is majority Democrat. And the Democrats want to genocide them, and they go, let's vote for them.
Yeah, it's a strange phenomenon, and a lot of people are talking about it. It looks as if it might swing to a larger percentage of Republican vote this time than it has ever, really, in terms of the Jewish vote in the United States. But old habits die hard, and the Democrats are still identified as the party of the marginalized and downtrodden. The Jews who identify with such groups. And so, and also, of course, this is another thing that's very important to note. I was speaking actually at a synagogue a few years back in Florida, and this woman came up to me with all these magazines, and they were magazines put out by the ADL and other Jewish organizations all about the rise in anti-Semitism. Now, this was a few years ago, before the huge rise in anti-Semitism that we've seen since October 7th. But she showed me that in magazine after magazine, they were warning about right-wing anti-Semitism.
Oh, yeah, it's Trump.
Trump. And nobody said a thing about left-wing anti-Semitism. And yet that's where all the real dangerous stuff is coming from right now. And so a lot of the Jewish voters, they are still operating in an extremely low-information environment when it comes to why all this is happening and who's behind it. And so they're still on the left.
What about in terms of a Kamala Harris, Tim Walz ticket? I mean, to me, it what really is alarming is they're really not pretending now. When Kamala says she's going to start giving everybody, you know, $25,000 to buy their first home, she's going to have grocery price controls, things like that. There's a part of me, on one hand, yes, it's pandering. But on the other hand, I kind of suspect she's not kidding. I mean, what she's talking about there, it's just government control over everything, right? And they're arresting people in Great Britain now for Twitter posts. And the Democrats are like, well, that's a good idea. We need to do that. I mean, you know, the White House correspondent from the Washington Post wanted the White House to do something about censoring the Twitter Trump conversation. I mean, it worries me, and I guess with all of the knowledge you have, how much would a Harris-Walz ticket worry you?
About 100%. I could end up in jail, and yeah. So could both of you.
Right.
Sure. No exaggeration. These people are not people who believe in freedom, and they don't believe in the freedom of speech. We already saw it with the Biden regime. You spoke about the Twitter, them wanting to censor Twitter, but the Biden regime actually did that.
Yes.
With dissidents, and they got Twitter under its old management, and Twitter is the only light now, the only hope we have of real freedom of speech. All the others are completely on board with government censorship. And then you have the fact that the the administration wanted to set up a disinformation governance board, which would judge what was true and what wasn't, of course, based on their own perspective. Right. And we already saw they labeled Hunter Biden's laptop disinformation when it was 100% real. So they are authoritarians. They want to crack down. They labeled people who were pro-lifers in Catholic churches terrorists and had them under surveillance. They labeled angry parents about critical race theory at school board meetings terrorists, had them under surveillance. These people don't believe in free inquiry. Obviously,
I love the old grandmas who sing a prayer at the abortion clinic, and wham!
Yeah,
you know, you're in the hold.
But you're a Hamas protester at the DNC.
Oh, you can do it. I was wondering, what does a joyful riot look like? I mean, it's going to be.
Say peaceful.
It's kind of diabolically clever, the joy thing, because Kamala Harris, of course, has this bad habit of cackling inappropriately when she's uncomfortable, when she doesn't know what to say and so on. And so they've decided to make her the joyful candidate. So that justifies her laughter. But it just reminds me of another authoritarian, Adolf Hitler, who had a program for entertainment. He was a totalitarian, you know, so you might not think he cared about entertainment, but he wanted to manage every aspect of the lives of the German people. And so there was actually a government department that was dedicated to offering vacations for.
Oh, very much so. Yeah, very much so.
And it was called Strength Through Joy.
And oh, God.
That's what we're headed to now. President, Strength Through Joy.
Well, let me ask you about the Iranian
because we've got Lori
strike,
C coming up.
I know a strike coming up or not coming up. What's happening there?
Well, there's anybody's guess. It looks as if even the Supreme Leader Ayatollah Khamenei is getting frustrated with the delay, because the other day he said, "If we don't carry out a major strike against Israel, we will be risking incurring Allah's wrath."
Oh,
so you know,
you don't want to do that.
No, that's bad.
That's the top cop. That's the biggest name you can invoke. If Allah's going to get mad if they don't strike Israel, I think the smart money right now is that the strike on Israel is going to come. I hope it will fail, but it seems to me that it's going to come.
Well, and let me then a final question for you. I know you've got, because I want to give you a chance to talk about this a little bit. You've got a new book coming out, right? Muhammad, a critical biography. Tell us a little bit about that and how can people get that?
Yeah, that's coming out in just 3 weeks, and it's available now for pre-order at Amazon. And it is I go through the stories about Muhammad from the earliest Islamic traditions and show that it's not actually one story. It's full of contradictions and disagreements. I don't see how anybody could read this book, this is a challenge, and think Muhammad was a real person after they read it.
This will be you and Chuck. Chuck and Peter Boyles always have conversations about Jesus Christ being a real person. So this is right up your alley then, too. All right, Robert, thank you. As always,
yeah, you're just great. Loved hearing from you.
It's a pleasure, folks. Always nice.
All right, thank you. Robert Spencer there. And you can get his new book, Muhammad, A Critical Biography. And let me kind of a note to Thomas. We should have Lori Sane coming up here any second. And if we don't, maybe give her a holler. Because we want to bring everybody up to speed on the Todd Watkins.
Trader Todd.
Real quick, some of the comments from Jacob. Strength of Joy was mentioned on Hogan's Heroes. Kamala Harris taking her campaign advice from Hogan's Heroes. And from Sandra, I'm shocked at all the women, many of them in Denver, that support Harris. These are college graduates. I held my tongue.
They're even the worst ones.
Yeah. Well, she says, I held my tongue in response to an acquaintance's Harris support, but thinking about it, I won't do that any longer. Oh, and then Donna, what did Chuck and team decide on Jesus Christ? Was he real?
I say he's real, and Peter, of course, thinks he's a fiction.
Right. And Jacob says, can I post that X video about Trump? Oh, yeah. Is that the one you were talking about? Jacob, you sent me that, I think. If you want to put it in the comment section, you can. Jacob has a good video here about Trump. This is joy, right? This was Trump, Trump and what actual joy really looks like. But to the Trader Todd.
Trader Todd.
So we on Friday, remember, we were telling you that the judge was going on the Trader Todd. He wants to have a fake meeting coming up this weekend. And I'm not going to talk about it a lot where or anything because I don't want to give it any publicity. And the state party had filed up for the court to issue a permanent injunction saying you can't have the meeting because it's a fake meeting. The court then late on Friday issued a ruling basically saying it didn't have jurisdiction. And I'll let you.
Well, it was kind of a strange opinion. They were saying, well, we don't have jurisdiction yet.
Right.
And we may have jurisdiction after the SEC decides that question, whenever they decide it. But until then, we lack jurisdiction. And then they made some extra little rulings. One of the things you have to ask the Republican Party to be able to use its name before using it. And it has a right to say that under state statute. He didn't care. Oh, yeah, but no harm, no foul. I mean, it's obvious that he's sort of gone to the dark side a little
The
bit.
judge.
And because it was kind of an adversary type ruling. Maybe that's reading it wrong, but it really did not give you a lot of hope that
What
he's
it
going
did
to
not do, though, as Todd, as Trader Todd is trying to
Yes,
claim,
that's
what it did
true.
not do was give any validity to his meeting. The
Right.
judge simply, the judge didn't rule on the merits of
One way or the other.
one way or the
But
other.
Todd said it did.
Right. But Todd
Because
is
Trader
again.
Todd also likes to lie a lot.
Right. And so, yeah, Trader Todd said, oh, no, it definitely, it said, so great, yay, the meeting's on. And the court ruling said nothing of the sort. It simply said the judge didn't feel that he had jurisdiction, which we had predicted, given the fact that he said he didn't
For
have
the temp.
jurisdiction on the temporary restraining order, right?
Right.
So that's a situation on that. But in the meantime, what has happened is the, let's see, we had this Colorado Republican Party official parliamentarian who does not work for Dave. He works for the Colorado Republican Party,
Yes,
right?
and he's a pretty fair guy, Gregory Carlson.
Right. So in the parliamentarian, he simply is like, this is my interpretation of the bylaws, right? And he said very clearly that Trader Todd did not meet with his petitions. The petitions were invalid. You can't just, bottom line, you can't just like call a meeting and declare yourself the Republican Party, oust the officers. I mean, there's certain steps and procedures you have to go through,
Nah,
right?
nah.
Okay, and Lori's gonna need a minute. Okay. Oh, okay. Thank you, Thomas. Thank you. Well, in the meantime, then the Colorado Republican Party reached out to the Republican National Committee's official parliamentarian, and he issued basically the same ruling, simply saying that, you know, if Todd has the right to want to hold a meeting, but there's certain things he has
Minimum
to
things.
do. Yeah, minimum things, like you have to get a certain number of signatures. They have to be actual voters. They have to be verified as part of the state central committee, et cetera, et cetera. And he didn't do any of those things. And he said, so you can't just hold a meeting. And his actual words were, he said, and actually he said Todd's interpretation of the bylaws was absurd. Right. And then he said that the meeting would be illegitimate, the same words as a state parliamentarian, and that any action taken would be null and void.
Right.
So it's be kind of like, you know, me and Tiger and Chuck could go ahead and, you know, call a meeting and elect Tiger president of the or chair of the Colorado Republican Party.
And he'd be a very, she'd be a very good
Very
chair.
good at it. But it'd have no more meaning. I mean, Todd's meeting has no more meaning than that,
Right,
right?
right.
And in the meantime, what you have to understand is the state party has said that on August 31st, if Todd and everybody want to come and try to, you know, I guess raise the possibility or raise the notion of holding a vote to oust the chair and doing it the correct way, they can talk about it at that meeting, right?
Right.
And how would that work? So, I mean, he would, I think they can't just vote to oust them on the 31st, but they could vote to have the meeting, right?
Right. And they could have their appeal. They have an appeal going, whether the other decision by the executive committee is right or wrong. But Todd doesn't want to do that. He has his own way, which is he and Eli Bremmer, he and the
Lou
Rhino,
Webb, probably.
Lou Webb, yes. And Dick Wadhams and all those, they don't care about destroying the Republican Party. They just care about the fact that those stupid grassroots people can't be in charge, and we have to be in charge because we have all the money. And
Right.
we have all the money. We got Anschutz, we got Coors, we got all the money.
Right.
And what are these stupid grassroots individuals thinking they have something to say? They don't have any money. Okay, Dave's done a great job of scrounging up a lot of money inventively, but no, we've got all the money, and you peons need to quit getting in our
Yeah, get
way.
Well, from Sandra Todd Watkins is probably learning from Dick Wadhams. They don't give a damn about what other people say. They believe they're always right. Well, and I would say this, my guess is Todd doesn't even think he's right. I mean, Todd.
He doesn't care.
He doesn't care. These people aren't dumb, right?
No, well, Todd is not dumb.
They're not.
Nancy Pelosi, okay. But Todd is not dumb.
No, he's not dumb. So he knows exactly what he's doing. And he doesn't care. And he never has cared.
No.
So he doesn't care that the state parliamentarian issued the ruling. He doesn't care that the Republican National Committee parliamentarian issued the ruling. And the reason that's important is that's to say that Todd goes ahead and holds his meeting and then they elect him as chair. Then obviously the Republican National Committee is probably going to go ahead and have to.
I just never know.
You never know. But this is their parliamentarian saying, no, that this is a completely illegitimate meeting. I said, we have Lori Saint on now. So Lori, go ahead and turn on your mic. I'm sorry. I texted you the email link. I should have emailed it, or the Zoom link. I should have emailed it to you. But thank you. Oh, are you unmuted? You should be. Thank you for your time today.
Yes.
So we just filled folks in on the RNC official parliamentarian said that Todd's meeting is a fake meeting and it's null and void. You can't do that. I know you're working hard on this issue to basically save the Republican Party from the people inside of it who want to destroy it. Kind of fill us in on some of the stuff you're doing and what you're hearing.
Well, to put in perspective, you know, in talking to some folks in the party, some have just joined the party. And obviously, this whole blow up has really soured them on being part of a party anymore. And that's unfortunate because we should be welcoming, especially if we align with principles. It's always been an unspoken rule that once the primaries are over, that we all get together and we help whomever get across the finish line. And so just in Weld County, we have got a plethora of races, that two of which we only lost by maybe 800, 1,000 votes. And so with all this drama going on with the inter-party fighting and the very public cutting board that the media is being exposed to and amplifying, this is not helping our cause. This is people looking from the outside in are going to say, why would I join a party like that?
Right.
When they fight and memory is probably not great sometimes among the electorate. They sometimes may forget things that are, you know, 2 years ago, maybe 1 year ago or 6 months ago. But this fight is happening right now as we're on the ground knocking doors for candidates. And I can tell you it's not helping. So not only do we have two House seats that we could pick up here in Weld County, we also have a Senate seat that had a Republican in it, who turned into a Democrat.
Oh, that's
now
right.
Now we have to get that seat back, right? So we have another, and again, we're only one seat away from giving the Democrats a super majority, which means they can take away Tabor just like that.
Right.
Well, this is no joking matter about what's going on here. And we should not be tolerating this kind of behavior, especially when, you know, it's fairly obvious that, you know, the meeting was called on the 19th and Todd and friends had an opportunity to not only show up at that meeting and make their concerns heard, but the feedback was a lot of folks live pretty far away. They have to make an effort to get here to a meeting, which means that meeting has to be scheduled far enough in advance so that our friends from the Western Slope can show up. And
right.
So apparently that meeting was scheduled for the 31st, which gave people ample time to change their plans to be able to come to this meeting, whether to keep Dave in or to not keep Dave in. And so that's reasonable to me, right? It's not,
yeah,
I mean, but again, what's not reasonable is calling a meeting a week before another scheduled meeting on the 31st. And then let's just say by some miracle, the RNC blesses, you know, the meeting on the 24th and said, we will let you have this meeting. They make a bunch of decisions. And then what happens on the 31st when it gets nullified, or if it does?
Right. Well, and the RNC, like we said, not the RNC, but at least their parliamentarian has said it's not a legitimate meeting. Well, and Lori, let me ask you what you think about this. I think that what you described is going on, the media attacks, the stirring up controversy, the making it harder for candidates. I think that's what Traitor Todd and his cohorts want. They do not want the grassroots arm of the Republican Party to have any success at all. So they are doing everything they can to sabotage it so they can turn around and say, see, you need to have all of us rhinos back in power. I mean, that's what I think. What's your sense on that?
Well, if that's really what he's trying to do, then I see that having the opposite effect. This isn't leadership.
Oh, no. They don't
If
want
he's only.
leadership. They just want power, Lori. Those are two different things, too.
Well, they conflate the two. So, if you're going to have leadership, like what I would ask Todd and others is please adjourn in favor of voting on the 31st. And if possible, minimize exposure to the media instead of, using it as a whipping board. Why not meet together, say, here's what we'd like to see, and then adjourn again in favor of voting on the 31st. So ideally, a meeting shouldn't happen at all, but let's get together on the 31st when everybody can make it and make a decision.
And it's an official meeting. I
Well,
mean,
that was
it's an official
brought up.
meeting.
That
Even the judge said there is an official meeting on the 30, the parliamentarian, there's an official meeting on the 31st. Just deal with, well, then I would submit to
well,
you.
hold
Oh,
on.
okay.
At the executive committee meeting, people said, "Hey, let's just have the meeting on the 31st. We can hear your issues. We can deal with everything else."
Yeah.
So it wasn't too short. Dave Williams have a child on the 20th, and so let's just do it. Todd said, "No, you do what I say, or the highway." I mean, he's incredibly belligerent, incredibly uncaring about what happens to, the two House seats and the Senate seat. He could care less. And the
Well,
mere fact this will now continue well into September, if not October, just ditching whatever prospects the Republicans have, is just one more proof there's a uniparty. It's the Democrats and the rhinos on one side, and we grassroots on the other. And no question that Traitor Todd works for the uniparty.
Well, and I would submit as well that the reason he doesn't want to wait to the 31st is he knows he doesn't have the votes. So he wants to have a meeting, I think, earlier when he controls it, when he sets the rules. I mean, you read his rules, he just like made them up. It'd be, again, I was saying earlier, if me and Chuck and our dog Tiger sat down and made up a meeting and made up our rules and then said, ta-da, we elected ourselves. Hooray. I mean, it has this, but I think that's what they know they don't have the votes. At least not now. And that's why they don't want to do it that way.
Well, I mean, you bring up a good point too about, the rule of law and being orderly. Nobody would just let a small minority call a meeting and change things at whim. That's, I don't think anybody operates that. I mean, whether it's a GOP party, a Democrat party, or anything else that seeks to have some kind of coherence and actually wants to move forward as a body to enact policy or to help candidates get elected or anything else. So,
Well, what's
those who
more,
usually cause anarchy are the same ones who say, hey, I'll come and fix it. Like somebody saying, I'm going to put the fire out, but keep adding brush on the fire. That doesn't make any sense.
Right. Well, that's what Charlene says too. They're intentionally wreaking chaos. Out of chaos comes a new order.
and they don't care that the people in the primaries, six of the seven, won were the rhinos,
Yeah, their people won.
Yeah, there are people who want to, we don't care. We still don't want to have it, they'll just have to sacrifice for the greater good of burning the party down.
Well, I mean, if what you say is true, and Todd is agitating for the other side that was in power previously, he's this is a big fail, right? This is, I mean, people are going to look at this and say, "Is this the leadership we really want?" Is what I suspect that people are going to turn this opportunity down. And I, honestly, it's funny because there's so many people who have emailed me, who've texted me. Because I sent an email out to the body and just said, hey, here's a couple points to consider, right? One, the meeting on the 24th is just, again, going to be another whipping board for the media. How is that helpful to us, right? And, secondly, the RNC and parliamentarians already weighed in. So if there really is a higher court, then his opinion truly does matter. And it seems like when Todd sent out his email, he was really poo-pooing, the opinion of the parliamentarian. And, if they're really accusing these parliamentarians of being paid to play, that's also defamatory, right? I mean, they do a certain job, and I believe they even warned the party saying, I might not agree with you, but you have to accept what I
Oh, and that's
opinion
what we
put out
heard.
there.
That we heard too, that both sides, right? And I mean, you know, we have great parliamentarian here in Adams County, and sometimes you do wish you had not actually asked him a question, but he doesn't, but he calls it as he sees it, right? He calls it down the line. And that's, I mean, people need to understand that about parliamentarians, because that's their credibility on the line there. And so, and you're
But they
right.
are not the final say. A parliamentarian only recommends.
No, but if I could see, but you have a good point. But if you're the RNC and this comes up, I mean, one of the persons you're going to ask what they think is the parliamentarian. And so, I just think, and I think, Laura, you're right. It's just a shame they're doing that. The media, of course, reports it corruptly. Nobody, they're like, oh, move to oust Dave back at the, which is exactly what they want, right? And so these people are playing. I said from the beginning, Nancy Pelosi was being manipulated by people, and the media was using her, and she was using the media. And in the meantime, like you said, if I know Johnny Johnson, one of our listeners said, because one of the things they've accused Dave and Hope and Anna of not providing any help, and you said, no, they've been helping me, right? They helped us with the website, and I know they are. Every day I get an email from Darcy saying support this candidate, some of whom I would not have supported in the primary, but it's, and I think people, and you've been a candidate, and let me just a couple more questions, but I mean, even so, there's only so much money. This, I mean, they're trying to make it sound like that. Oh, Dave, and they're withholding all of this money. It's like there's no money there, really, is there? It's like if you're a candidate, you can't expect the state party to do everything for you.
Well, back to perspective, the state party's been neutered for a very long time based on some of the events that have surrounded several things going back before I even got in as a candidate, right? And the state party never raised a lot of money for candidates. It had shifted at that point to big donors and others, the RNC, AFP, for example, is a recent one, who actually fund individual candidates as they see fit. Dave Evans being one example, right? We lost that seat very narrowly. Another seat we could potentially pick up without all this drama. So, and again, to your point, I mean, what is the point of doing this if they want to show that they are the better leaders? If they show, if they're trying to show that we can govern and we want to convince voters to come to our side, I don't see that being a winning strategy.
No.
Well, what you said earlier, by tradition, Republicans would fight among each other until the primaries. Once the primaries is over, they'd all unite. That was never quite true. What happened is, you, after the
Chuck never united.
well, no, but once if you had a grassroots person who went through the primary and won, then all funding was cut off for them. They wouldn't be public about it, but all funding was, that person would have no money from AFP, from Coors, from anybody. And so they but they would say unify, unify, unify. If a rhino would, then they'd plied all the money and so forth. And they say, well, you rhinos aren't enthusiastic enough. You know, you're not
Are you grassroots people?
grassroots, really. You're not enthusiastic enough about our rhino. But certainly, Anschutz never gave any money to any grassroots candidate after the primary was over.
Let's just consider again perspective historically. And again, I'm a newcomer to politics relative to you and others, but the embezzler Ryan Call was the chair of the state party who sent out mailers against me in the primary. So the state party has traditionally not backed conservatives. They've actually either his, I believe his face and his signature were on that mailer against me, right? I mean,
Doesn't seem very unifying to
how
me.
crazy is that, right? And they spent a goodly amount of money on those mailers. I think they were hitting like once a day. I mean, that's crazy. So I mean, it's when they say, well, X did this, well, exhibit A, right? And if you want to talk about, being embarrassed about a party chair, there's example A. He was the one pushing to make sure we had open primaries. I don't know if you remember that, but as soon as he was out of the chairmanship, he was roaming around the state capitol pushing open primaries.
No, I know. It's insane. Hey, listen, we have to go now, but Laura, I want to say thank you for coming on
Yeah,
and thank
appreciate
you
it.
for your perspective, because it's always great. I mean, you've been on all sides of
Thank you.
this, and we appreciate all your hard work too. So
Take
thank
care,
you.
Laurie. Talk to you soon.
All right, sounds good. Thank you.
All right, thank you. Laurie's staying there. We will keep you updated. Real quick, we'll have to talk about this on Wednesday. Joe Biden is giving a speech passing the torch.
Passing the torch.
startup is you know what. Listen, it's like
passing the torch.
The torch. Yeah, it's like that's like being kicked out.
They're gonna immobilate him right on stage.
Yeah,
as a way of passing the torch.
Passing the
torch. Cremating him early.
It should be if they're not overcome by Hamas rioters. So
yeah, right. They know something about burning things down.
Exactly. Exactly. On Wednesday, we're gonna have Brian Junedep on.
Oh, okay,
he has great. A good column up telling the Never Trumpers to put on their big boy panties and go ahead for all the very reasons that Robert Spencer was talking
right,
about
right.
what's happened to the party. So that's going to do it for us.
We'll see you all on Wednesday and have a great week.
All right. Bye, everyone.